The following paid program does not represent the views of North Shore 104.9.
Welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. This morning during the program, your host, Mark Friedman, may discuss specific financial planning and investment ideas. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Financial planning and investment advice is offered through Friedman Financial, an SEC-registered investment advisor located in Peabody, Massachusetts. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, a member of FINRA and SIPC. Friedman Financial is a separate entity from LPL Financial. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Always consult a certified financial planner professional, qualified attorney, or tax advisor prior to investing to determine what is appropriate for you.
Listeners to this radio show should consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses of the investment company carefully before investing. The prospectus contains this and other information about the mutual fund, variable annuity, and variable annuity subaccounts. To obtain a prospectus, you may contact Friedman Financial or your financial advisor. Prospectuses should be read carefully before making a potential investment.
And now, here's the host of Dollars and Cents, Mark Friedman of Friedman Financial.
Good morning and welcome to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman, President and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, where we're providing financial advice in a language you can understand to individuals and families all around the North Shore, the Merrimack Valley, and the Southern New Hampshire area. I hope you're all doing well this mid-August Sunday. Hard to believe that there's just a couple more weeks left to summer vacation. And the Red Sox have come through this year to ruin the rest of our summer. Yeah, they're done. I mean, it's time. I got my Celtics schedule this past week, so I guess something to look forward to there. Hopefully, they will be an entertaining team. I don't think they're a world championship team, but they'll be entertaining. It'll be fun to watch. A lot of youth on the team, a lot of excitement. I think that'll be a great showcase of stuff, and look forward to getting to a few games. Really have no interest in going to see the Red Sox for the rest of the season. I'm done. It's just frustrating now. But, you know, we've got my kids are starting to go back to college. Perhaps if you have kids that are in college, they're starting to think about going back. Perhaps you're thinking about back to school for the kids in the elementary schools, the middle schools, the high schools. And if you're an empty nester, congratulations to you. No more worries about the kids for college or for high school. But ask yourself, are they still on the payroll? And unfortunately, many of the kids still are these days because it's our fault. It is our fault, folks, because we spoiled them. Yep, we did. We spoiled them. We gave them more than they, certainly more than we were ever given when we were kids. And we've been opening up our checkbooks for so many things for them that they began. They established this this culture where they expect to have the best of the best of things. And now that they're starting to live with their first paycheck, they're realizing, well, in order to continue to live the lifestyle to which they've grown accustomed, they can't do that on a entry-level salary. They still need mom and dad to help out. I'm not suggesting that that's something that is a good thing or a bad thing. I think there's a little bit of both there. But the biggest challenge that I talk to listeners about is how you will address it as an empty nester, as a parent. How will you balance what you continue to provide to your children, both monetarily and emotionally, versus what will you continue to do for yourself or sacrifice in your own life as you prepare for retirement while they're trying to build their nest egg, their lifestyle, their relationships, their families. It's a tough balance. It's part of the conversations that we have at our office at Friedman Financial all the time. You know, years ago, we had done a presentation. I forget even what the topic was. There might have been 80 people in the room. And I asked the question of the group. And most of these people were 60 plus because most of our clients are actually the average age of our clients. I just found out through a recent report, average age of our client base is 65 years old, which is good. As far as that's a sweet spot of what we want. But nevertheless, we have 80 people in the room. I ask the question, given the choice to live retirement to its fullest and leave whatever's left to the kids, or sacrifice retirement a little bit so that your kids could have a better life than you did, which would you choose? Which would you choose? As I ask that question to you, what would What would you choose? What would you pick? The first one or the second one? If you've given the choice, you're now in retirement. If I could live retirement to its fullest, spend what I want to spend, do what I want, and if there's money left over, great. I'll pass it on to the kids, but I'm not going to live my retirement thinking, oh my gosh, I need to continue to make sure that there's a nest egg that's left for the kids. Or just the opposite, saying, you know, I'm used to this lifestyle. I'm not going to take advantage of some of the things that I want to do because I'm really worried. I want to make sure that the kids have the nest egg that they deserve, that they need, so that they don't have to go through the struggles that I went through, or even just position themselves better for the future. What's interesting to me is chances are each person listening to that question has a very strong opinion, one or the other. You're thinking about the other opinion that I've offered up to saying, who would do that? And if you're a husband and wife or a couple or a spouse, whatever, you may have very opposite thoughts on that same question. And what we learned in that presentation that I made to the 80 people was that you drew the line right down the middle. It was 50-50. There is not a strong leaning one way or the other. Yet your bias feels like the bias that you have should be the bias that everybody has, of course. But it is not. What was fascinating to even more so to me is many people who had come to this meeting, there were 80 of them in the room, some of them, couples, came with friends. And when asked to raise their hand about which option they'd pick, they were surprised, in some cases, shocked that their friends would react differently from the way that they reacted by that question. Folks, there is no right or wrong answer. My point in sharing that with you is just that. We all deal with money differently. And what we think is the right way to handle money is different, even to our spouse sometimes, but more so to our neighbors, to our friends, to our circle of connections, to our coworkers, to our community. I mean, we don't have to get into the political dialogue here, but I think you all well know that there are many people who have extraordinarily strong opinions on a lot of political positions that go on here in this country. Yet those that take that political position think that anybody that doesn't think like they do is just a moron. That is not what I call inclusive thinking. That is not what I call freedom. That is not what I call the opportunity to be part of America. We can have our opinions, but being able to respect the opinions of others, whether it's politically, whether it's financially, whether it's emotionally, whatever it is, if we are truly trying to be non-judgmental, to live in America, to live in a country where there are freedoms, we have to be accepting of the stuff that we don't necessarily feel comfortable with. And that's all part of the financial process, the financial planning process, because there will be some people that will insist that the only way that you become successful financially is to put all of your money in the bank, take no risk with economics, buy CDs, live off the interest, and if the interest is really small, well, then you better change your way of living. It's that simple. Or others that say, I want to live on the edge, and everything in between. What's the right answer? How do we approach it? And when you think about what's gone on over the past couple weeks here in the markets, look, we hit all-time highs. Then the market drops 500 points. Then it goes up 300 points. Then it drops 400 points. Did you know over the past couple weeks, the average movement in the market, either up or down, average movement has been a 450 points? Now, that might sound like a big number. 450 points movements when the Dow Jones Industrial Average is at 5,000, yeah, that's a big movement. But 400 points when the Dow Jones Industrial Average is in 24, 25, 26,000, it's not such a big deal. It's notable, but it's not that big a deal. I thought it was interesting this week. Someone was in the office and they saw that the market had gone up 370-something points. When I refer to the market, I'm referring to the Dow Jones Industrial Average because nobody really knows what the S&P is. If I asked you, what's the S&P at right now? People don't know that number. But they hear about the S&P. They know they want to beat it but they don't know what the number is of the S&P. Frankly, most people, if I asked you what's in the S&P 500, most people would tell me it encompasses 500 stocks. Now, they're market weighted and adjusted, but there's 500 of the largest stocks. But you don't know what the number is. What did the S&P close at today? But if I asked you, what did the Dow Jones Industrial Average close at today, approximately, you're way more likely to tell me what that number is. But if I ask you, what is in the Dow Jones Industrial Average? You might go, I don't know. It's kind of odd, isn't it? The Dow Jones Industrial Average, just so you know, is made up of 30 stocks. That's it, 30 stocks. 30 stocks that are industry and sector leaders. And it's market weighted. The bigger the company, the more weighting is applied to that index. The same applies to the S&P 500, but you got 500 stocks. In the Dow Jones Industrial Average, it's 30. So when we hear companies like Facebook and Amazon and Apple or Microsoft or whatever doing well, not only are they doing well, they're really adding extra acceleration to the Dow Jones Industrial Average because they're amongst the largest stocks in that group of 30. You really need to understand the dynamics and how all of that economic works, because when you don't, we begin to make poor decisions, poor investment decisions. And in the next segment, I want to share with you a report that just came out from Dalbar. Dalbar is the industry leader in doing market research on investment behavior. And they just put together a report. It came out for the period ended 12/31/2018. It's called The Quantitative Analysis on Investment Behavior. And it takes a look at how rational are individual investors as opposed to how the market performs separate from them. We perform way different than the way the index does. And we'll talk about that when we're back. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
I need a dollar, dollar, dollar. That's what I need. Hey, hey. Well, I need a dollar, dollar, dollar.
What if you could blend the classic strategies of investing with a contemporary approach to financial planning? That's what Friedman Financial can do for you. Wherever you are along your financial journey, Friedman Financial has the skills, technology, and experience to help you make smart financial decisions. Their team of certified financial planners will deliver an independent, objective, personalized plan for you. Let's make 2019 the year you get serious about your financial plan. Friedman Financial, financial advice in a language you can understand.
Planning for retirement and managing your investments has never been more difficult. Chances are you're trying, but worried you may make a misstep. Friedman Financial is all about getting your financial house in order and providing financial advice in a language you can understand. Their interactive software and in-person conversations will help you determine if you're on track. For more than 50 years, Friedman Financial has delivered independent advice. If now's the time to get serious about life and retirement, visit Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com.
Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Friedman Financial, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
If I had $1 million.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located on 41 Cross Street in Peabody, right across the street from the North Shore Mall and right above Alto Forno Restaurant. If you haven't been to Alto Forno, take a peek over there. They do not pay me to say that. They do not advertise on my show, nothing like that. I just like to eat there. So oftentimes you might see me sitting at the bar. If you haven't been to the bar, it's cool, cool bar. It's owned by the Mamola family, Dan and Daniela Mamola. They also have Palana. They have Daniela's over in Danvers. Three great restaurants to go visit. If you have a chance, take a visit over there. I might run into you over there because I eat there quite a bit. Anyways, we are here each and every Sunday from 8 to 9 a.m. providing you with financial advice in a language you can understand. We've been doing this for, I guess it's about 8 years now, both at a bigger station years ago and now here at North Shore 104.9 for about the past 6 or 7 years. I've met so many of you. We're local. I mean, this station is about being local. Our business is local. My father started our firm back in 1968. And you think about 1968, what were you doing in 1968? Some of you are driving around right now thinking, I wasn't born yet, Mark. I was born in 1966. That makes me 53 years old. And that's what I am. And when Dad started this business, he was going door to door, helping people prepare for their future by seeing if they could commit to saving $25 a month. That wasn't really financial planning back then, but that's the best they had at the time. And that's what Dad did. And then our business has evolved. It's changed a lot, like any business has changed a lot. Dad brought me into the business in 1991. I actually asked to join the business. I really didn't know what he did for a living. How I joined the business is a story for another day. But I joined in 1991. Marion Gilman joined our firm in 2000. She is now my business partner. His dad retired in 2007, and Marion and I now run the business together. So we have several generations of clients. And one of the things that I've learned over 27, 28 years is that no matter how many circumstances and situations I see where clients pull back the curtain, open up the kimono, if you will, just share everything about their financial life, there is nothing that's the same. People might invest similarly, but that's about the extent of what the similarities are. How we use money, how we work with money, how we live with money, how we think about money in our lives is totally different. And it's influenced by behaviors that we saw growing up in our parents. It's influenced by behaviors that we see from our respective spouses. And it's behaviors that we create together as a family unit for what's best for our family. Many people talked years ago about the fact that, you know, well, you'd basically want to invest, the way you invested money for the future is you invested your age in bonds and the rest in stocks. You ever hear that? It's the old wives' tale that said as you're younger, let's say you're 20 years old, well, you'd only put 20% of your money in bonds and 80% in stocks. And as you turned 80 years old, well, you'd have 80% of your money in bonds and 20% of your money in stocks. That's an old wives' tale. But it worked well for years because interest rates in bonds were competitive. That you could get 4, 5, 6, sometimes even double-digit returns in the 80s. But that type of thinking, that type of strategy has been thrown way out the window over the past 10 or 15 years. We're nowhere near that. We have to think differently about how we build an investment strategy for ourselves, especially in a world where, unlike our parents, a pension is not likely to be the primary source of our income in retirement. Now, for those that work in municipalities, those that are teachers, et cetera, yes, you'll get your pension. If you work for the government, you work as a police officer, a firefighter. But that's a fraction, a sliver of all the people here in our community. If you were in Washington, D.C., totally different story. A lot of people are government workers there. But here, it's a sliver. So the way we have to think about our money is different. And when we start thinking about our money and having to take control of our money, we allow it to become emotional in our lives. And so that's why I wanted to share this story today from a report that I got from Dalbar. It's called the Quantitative Analysis of Investor Behavior for the Period Ending December 31st, 2018. The goal here was really to help advisors. This was written for advisors to help us educate the challenges that exist in real time between how the media reports on market performance versus how individual investors actually perform in their accounts. And so I'm going to read you some of the bullet points that come from this executive summary. And remember, this is for the year 2018. I can't talk about 2019. It's not over with. So this is last year. In 2018, the average equity fund investor, that means if you were an investor and you bought equity funds, stock-based mutual funds, exchange-traded funds, index funds, the average equity fund investor underperformed the S&P 500 index by 504 basis points. Now, you're saying to yourself, what the heck is a basis point? So 504 basis points means 5.04%. Okay, so I could have said 5.04%, underperformed by 5.04%. You would have understood that. But in market terminology, if you hear this in industry speak, they said, well, they underperformed by 504 basis points. That meant nothing to you until I said 5.04%. That's because the S&P 500 for 2018 was negative. negative 4.38% for the year. Now, you might be thinking to yourself, wait a second, my account's doing really well this year. It's up so much. Yes. Now, let's talk about 2018. 2018, the S&P 500, according to this Dalbar research study, was down negative 4.38%. Now, when we compare individual equity investors, so the company goes in and they look at individual investors, how people invested at Fidelity, at Schwab, at wherever else it might be, and they look at what was the performance of these people that wanted to buy stock-based investments. The average performance for the average equity fund investor last year, 2018, was down 9.42%, where the S&P 500 was down 4.38%. Why is that? Why do you think the average investor performed so much worse? Well, one of the obvious things is people say, I want to invest to beat the S&P 500. Well, if you want to beat the S&P 500, it means that you better be doing stuff that isn't the S&P 500. Because if you invested exactly like the S&P 500, you'd perform exactly like the S&P 500. So you figure, I'm smarter than that. Kramer says I'm smarter than that. Susie Orman says I'm smarter than that. Dave Ramsey says I'm smarter than that. Money Magazine says I can do this. Look at all the headlines that I see on CNBC and Bloomberg and all these other places. I can beat the market, no problem. So what we do is we try to be tactical. We try to say, well, I heard gold's doing really well, or technology's doing really well, or what's this cannabis thing that I hear about? Or we try to pick stuff. Get in, get out, get in, get out. Or we react to the markets. We react to the news. We react to the headlines. And if you're an individual investor without the safety net, if you will, of some kind of a financial advisor who will correspond with you rationally during emotional decision-making time, you're bound to be lucky on the upside, but sorely performing poorly on the downside. Our strategy at Friedman Financial has been, we build you a portfolio along with your entire financial planning story, but we build this portfolio such that it's not expected to see any changes in the portfolio in due time. There might be some adjustments, I mean, minor tweaks, but the reason isn't because, oh my goodness, the Fed is suggesting a recession might be coming, or China is doing things that is going to suggest that we might have to impose tariffs here in America, or immigration is a problem, or anything like that. I'm not reshifting my portfolio or your portfolio for that, because those are short-lived events. We're sticking to it, knowing that there will be hills and valleys along the way. Remember, the stock market, the S&P 500, went through those same hills and valleys that you did as an individual investor, but the one thing that the S&P 500 did not do is sell out and decide to get back in again. But the minute you try to be tactical, getting out, getting back in, getting out, getting back in, you assure yourself of losses because you have to pay fees and costs to get out anyways, not to mention the loss of time that you're not in the market. So once again, the number one executive summary bullet point that came from the Dalbar study of investor behavior that came out of 2018, which it frankly is consistent with almost every single year that they do this, is buying and holding makes a heck of a lot more sense than trying to be tactical. Where it said here in 2018, the average equity fund investor, that doesn't mean, well, I put some money in stock, some money in bonds, some. If you invested in stock funds, and you were comparing your stock fund investing to the S&P 500 for 2018, you did 5% worse on average than the stock market. Yuck. And if you said, well, I did better than that, congratulations, but can you do it consistently? That's really what this is all about. How about this? Here's point number two. The average equity fund investor withdrew funds every month, every time the S&P 500 had a material gain in 2018. What that means is that every time the S&P 500 was up for the year, the average equity fund holder, you or I, was taking money out of the account. Yeah, I need $10,000 for a car. I need $1,000 to cover my expenses a month. I whatever it is. Remember, when you're looking at performance of the S&P 500 or any index for that matter, the performance is showcasing a period of time that's January 1st to December 31st without anybody adding any money or anybody taking any money out. It's just simple. The minute you say, well, I'm going to tweak it, I'm going to take a little bit of money out, or I'm going to add money every month, whichever you choose to do, you no longer can compare your performance to the S&P 500, though we all try to. Here's another point. The only month the average equity fund investor made a significant contribution was a month where the S&P lost approximately 2.5%. So it's interesting that the only month where actually investors made money was the month when S&P actually lost some money. Now, by the way, this was, I thought, was interesting. Last year in 2018, the two worst months for the average investor versus the S&P 500 were August and October of 2018. That's when the average investor did worse than the S&P 500. And I, after looking at what's going on this month, right now, with all the volatility, I feel very comfortable that when this report comes out for 2019, we will find that the average investor did poorly, way worse than the S&P 500 did for the month of August. I don't know what the month of October will hold. But you know what I'll also be sure of? I bet the S&P 500 far outperformed the average equity investor in January, February, and March of this year. Because as you may remember, the end of 2018, October, November, and December, the market dropped just under 20% in value. And it made people really worried. It made us wonder, what should we be doing? Is this time different? And many people were rejigging their portfolios. At Friedman Financial, our approach was just noise, folks. We're investing for the long term. These are normal cycles in the market. And for those that held true, man, did you see a nice run-up January, February, and March of 2019. But if you had decided to get out, if you decided to say, you know, I'm going to get out and I'm going to wait till the market to drop a little bit more and then I'll get back in, it just doesn't work that way. Market timing does not work. Warren Buffett will tell you that. Peter Lynch will tell you that. Ron Barron will tell you that. Anybody who's one of the greatest, any of the greatest investors out there will tell you market timing does not work. Because you know why? You have to be right twice. You have to know when to get out and then when to get back in again. And nobody does that well. There are too many moving pieces, and the moving pieces from 1980 and 1999 have just exponentially grown. There's just too many more variables. Interesting stuff, huh? So I've got a lot more to share with you from this report. I think you'll find this really fascinating. We're going to dig into some investment behavior issues in the next couple segments, but for now, we have to take a break. I want to remind you to sign up for our newsletter, which is called Planning Pointers. It comes out each and every Friday at 10:30 in the morning. Go to my website, friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com. Go to the bottom of the page, put in your email address, send me a note, say hello, whatever it is, and we'll get you in our newsletter. But for now, we got to take a quick break. I'll be right back. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. Oh, 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 oh.
Just got paid.
Hi, this is Mark Friedman, president of Friedman Financial in Peabody. For more than 50 years, Friedman Financial has provided financial advice in a language you can understand to individuals and families all throughout the North Shore. At Friedman Financial, we know that planning for your retirement is overwhelming. Don't leave this important decision to chance, or even worse, the algorithms of a faceless technology solution. Our certified financial planner professionals meet with you face-to-face to know you and your retirement goals. If now's the time to get serious about your retirement, meet with a certified financial planner at Friedman Financial in person. You deserve a strategy that incorporates every aspect of your retirement plan. To learn more, give us a call at 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. Or visit us at friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com. Friedman Financial, financial advice in a language you can understand.
Securities offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advice offered through Friedman Financial, a registered investment advisor and separate entity from LPL Financial.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, where we provide financial advice in a language you can understand to individuals and families who live all throughout the North Shore, the Merrimack Valley, and the Southern New Hampshire area. We've been doing this since 1968. Three and four generations of families have worked with us. And it's been my pleasure. It really has been an honor to be able to meet so many families. You know, we're dealing with issues from birth to death. It's really everything. I know today we're talking a lot about investments, but oftentimes in other parts of our shows, we will talk about, you know, how do we prepare for that transition in life when we lose a spouse, for instance, dealing with death, dealing with retirement, dealing with Social Security. How do we save for our kids' education? How are we more prudent with how we're managing our resources so that we have enough money in retirement? We talk about all of that stuff. But a lot of those, all of those things that we talk about and what we're talking about today are oftentimes psychological and behavior related issues. It's important that we understand why do we do what we do. And oftentimes it's more habitual. Oftentimes it's because that's what my friends do. That's what my mom and dad taught me to do. Or that's what just I think is the right thing to do for now. Or sometimes it's because I want to be a rebel and do something different. Well, one of the things we're talking about today is a report that came out of DALBAR. DALBAR is one of the industry leading organizations that does market research on investment behavior, and all sorts of things as it relates to money and benchmarking studies. Well, the annual study that they put together is called the Quantitative Analysis of Investment Behavior, of investor behavior. What they do is they look at how did individual investors, people who choose to invest either through a financial advisor or on their own, how do they perform compared to market indexes? And the report is really no different for 2018 than what it was in 1970. The results are generally the same. It's impossible to beat the S&P 500. It's impossible to beat any index unless you buy the index. And the reason for that is because as human beings, we are emotional. We make decisions based upon emotions rather than a computer, which is essentially the S&P 500. It's a quantitative machine that manages a fixed set of 500 stocks that are market weighted. There is no emotions attached. When Trump says that we're going to impose tariffs of 15, 10, or 60% in China, the S&P goes, they're really not interested. It's not a big deal. They cannot make a change. It's fixed. But you and I will react. When we hear that Christmas sales are down, or the price of gas is going up, or the unemployment is up, or it can be anything. We react because maybe our job situation has changed. Maybe the conversations we're having with our children have changed. Maybe we can't afford to outlive in our house anymore. Whatever it might be, or things are getting better, and we react differently as well. The S&P 500 or any index is totally emotion free. They are absolutely the truest sense of unbiased. And the minute you put emotion in your investment decisions is the moment when you run the risk of underperforming an index. So earlier in the show, I talked about this bullet that said in 2018 was not a good year for the stock market. Now, you just may remember the last 3 months where the market was down 19-point-something%. It was just under 20, so we couldn't call it a bear market. We could still call it was a correction. Market was okay in 18, then it dropped towards the end. At the end of the year, the S&P 500, as managed by Standard & Poor's, of 500 stocks that are market-weighted, S&P 500 was down negative 4.38% for 2018, a negative year. But the average investor who wanted to invest in stock-based mutual funds who wanted to try to beat the market. The average investor was down 9.42%. And the reason was, you got in, you got out. This fund was underperforming. I saw this in my 401k. I saw the quarterly report. This fund's not doing so good. I'm going to add something. I'm going to move it. Every time you added money, you impacted your performance. Every time you took money out, you impacted your performance. Every time you made a change, you impacted performance. In fact, individual investment performance is one of the hardest measurements to measure, because it's what's called an internal rate of return calculation. You have to look at performance every single day, where the money was added, where the money was taken out. You should never try to compare the performance of your 401k plan to an index. Because in your 401k plan, you're generally adding money every week, every pay period, every month. And so if you're doing that, let's say your 401k had $100,000 at the beginning of the year, and at the end of the year, it now is worth $110,000. You might think to yourself, oh my goodness, I made 10% on my investment. But what if you now look at the details and realize that you added $8,000 over the course of the year through salary reduction? So isn't your growth really only $2,000, not $10,000? Eight of that $10,000 in growth came from you adding more money. But you might see, well, the S&P 500, if you had invested $100,000 in the S&P 500 at the beginning of the year, and now at the end of the year, it's up to $105,000. You might think to yourself, man, I'm pretty smart. I just outperformed the S&P 500. I have $110,000. Well, you really didn't. I hope you understand that. The S&P 500 grew $5,000 in this example, $5,000 due to growth, because nothing was being added, nothing was being taken out. It went from 100 to 105 for the year. Your account that started with $100,000 and is now worth 110 only grew $2,000 because 8 of it was through salary reduction or through your employer match or whatever it was. That doesn't make you smarter than the S&P 500. And, you know, I don't want to just pick on the S&P 500 here, because what if you said to yourself, well, I just invest in bonds. Well, how did the average bond fund investor do? In 2018, the average fixed income fund investor underperformed what's called the Bloomberg Barclays Aggregate Bond Index. Just like we have the S&P 500 for stocks, the Bloomberg Barclays Aggregate Bond Index is the bond index for fixed income securities. The Bloomberg Barclays Aggregate Bond Index for 2018 was up, get this, up, big number here, up 0.01%. Can we just say it was flat? 0.01%. That's basically, that's if you had $100, you grew a penny. Come on, that's let's call it flat, okay? But the average investor who invested in bond funds underperformed the index by 2.84%. They came in at negative 2.84, where the index was up 0.01%. Same thing happens with bond investors, because oftentimes bond investors are saying, well, this is my safe investment. Or they're thinking it's the safe investment. They say, well, I might need $10,000 for my account. Maybe we'll take it from the bond fund. Or maybe I'm adding money. Or people said, you know, CDs were so bad in 2018 that maybe I want to add some money to my bond fund. So they added money in the middle of the year. And interest rates go up and interest rates go down. But if you've been listening to this show, you know that one of the things that I talk about is the importance of asset allocation, having some money in stock funds, some money in bond funds. And when I say stock funds or bond funds, I'm just not talking about mutual funds. It could be exchange-traded funds. It could be index funds. But something that gives you professional money management, great amounts of diversification, liquidity, and pricing that you can see on a daily basis. That's important. Oftentimes, we find that many of our clients enjoy a portfolio that's, let's say, 60% in the stock market, 40% in the bond market, using a collection of investment strategies. Well, how did that group do? If you are the average asset allocation investor, or let's just call yourself the average asset allocation fund investor, someone that buys that target date fund. Maybe you have that in your 401k. So that might be one fund that's 60-40. Or the average balanced fund investor. Well, the average asset allocation fund investor, I'm going to find it here, lost 6.97% in 2018. 6.87% compared to the S&P 500, which was down 4.38%. So remember I told you earlier that if you invested all of your money, if you were a stock-only based investor, for 2018, on average, you lost 9.42%, where the S&P 500 was down 4.38%. If you decided to go the asset allocation route, 60-40, you were down on average 6.97%. Certainly not as much as the 100% stock investor, but you still underperformed the S&P 500. But here's the thing that I find fascinating. When you go to pick an investment, when you're doing all your research and you're talking to your financial advisor or doing it on your own, you might go to Morningstar, you might go to Bloomberg, you might go to Valueline, you might go to Yahoo Finance. I don't care which research company you go to. And what is one of the things that you're always looking at? People are looking at, well, what's the 5-year return? What's the 10-year return? What's the 15-year return? How's this thing done? And we all buy or make our investment decisions based upon that. We think to ourselves, well, I understand this account's going to go through ups and downs. There's going to be challenges. There's going to be economic shifts. There's going to be recessions. There's going to be economic expansion. There's going to be all sorts of things that happen. But if I can buy a fund that has a great 5-year, 10-year, or 15-year track record, I should do just great. I should do just great. But there's a problem with that. And that comes from a report that Dabbler just reported that talks about the retention rates. How long do you actually stick with the investments that you buy? You want to learn more about that? Well, that's where we take a break. And that's what we'll tease you for our very next segment. You want to know how long the average investor sticks around with a mutual fund, an exchange-traded fund, an index fund, what we call a retention rate? Well, you stick around. We'll be right back. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
What a sound. Oh, what a show.
Oh, what a night.
It's Jersey Boys on stage at North Shore Music Theater.
Sherry, Sherry baby.
How did four blue-collar kids become one of the greatest success stories in pop music history? Find out at Jersey Boys, Broadway's Tony Award-winning musical about Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons. Experience the true story musical phenomenon that takes you behind the scenes and behind the music.
Big girls
don't cry,
they don't cry.
Why don't you come on?
Put your dress on.
Jersey Boys is at Bill Haney's North Shore Music Theater from August 6th through September 1st only. Get your tickets today at nsmt.org.
Oh, what a night.
Sponsored by Abiomed.
Welcome back to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9. My name is Mark Friedman. I'm president and CEO of Friedman Financial, located in Peabody, Massachusetts, right across the street from the North Shore Mall and just above Alto Forno Restaurant. If now is the time for you to get serious about your financial planning, for you to get your financial house in order, I hope you'll give us a call, 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. You want to learn more about the firm? Go to visit our website, friedmanfinancial.com. That's Friedman, two E's and a D, financial.com. Go anywhere on the page. I mean, we write our own newsletter. Write our own website and our own newsletter, of course. It amazes me how many financial advisors I look to learn from by just doing some searches on the web. And I find that 9 times out of 10, even the independent advisors have not created their own website. They buy a canned website. Oftentimes at the bottom of any website, Any website you go to, certainly through a financial advisor, you can see something. Sometimes it says FMG Suite. FMG Suite is one of these companies where you can just buy their template. I sign up for newsletters, just like I have a newsletter that I offer out to many financial advisors, many listeners, anybody who wants my free weekly newsletter. It's called Planning Pointers. It lands in your inbox on Friday at 10:30 in the morning. All you need to do is go to my website, friedmanfinancial.com, go to the bottom of the page, put in your name, your email address. You want to leave me a message, that's great. But we will set you up with our free weekly newsletter that has had, I guess it's 700 consecutive issues now, going back to 2008, 2009. It's really remarkable. And we write every single one of our newsletters. And people say to me, Mark, the thing that I love about your newsletter, and there's over 7,500 subscribers, I love the titles. The titles are always pretty catchy. I'm trying to think of what my title was for this week because I already submitted it, but I don't know. It doesn't matter. But what's interesting to me is the number of people that sign up for my newsletter with the 7,500, almost 2,000 of the subscribers to my newsletter are financial advisors themselves. And that's fine. I'm happy to share information. That's all good. But oftentimes when they subscribe to my newsletter, I in turn sign up for many of their newsletters. And what amazes me is on a Tuesday every month, I might get 50 or 60 newsletters that show up all at the same time. And they come from 50 or 60 different financial advisors, all with the same title. It's all the same newsletter. It's just a different face in the upper left-hand corner. Folks, when I talk about providing you with financial advice in a language you can understand, it's advice that's coming from us. We write our own newsletter. We write the messages that we provide to you. When we meet with you and give you advice, we provide our advice in writing afterwards. Every time you visit my office, we do what's called a memo to file, where I write a story. Actually, I dictate it. I dictate a story about what happened in our meeting so that I have a reference point. My entire staff has a reference point of what we talked about. In addition to that, I follow up with a thank you letter or some kind of a communication to you that says, thanks for visiting the office. Here's what we talked about today. Here's what we agreed we were going to do. I'm not hitting a button that says, well, send, you know, template 1A/B because we talked about that issue. No, I dictate, or my business partner or someone in the office dictates, a letter that captures what we talked about. Our relationship at Friedman Financial is very personal. And it needs to be personal when you reach a point in your life when you need to get serious. You know, in the accumulation phase of your life, you're trying to save as much money as you can, just doing the best you can. That's great. And you should continue to do that and work with financial advisors to help you do that. But all of a sudden, you're going to get to a point in your life when you're 50 years old, 55, 60, and you're beginning to think, oh my goodness, retirement is right on the horizon. And I'm not so sure I know what all this stuff is that I have, what it all means. How will it impact my life? How will I be able to create an income stream after the paycheck stops? That is when people start calling Friedman Financial. That's when they call my firm because they say, it was fun dealing with all these people, but now I got to get serious. And now I want somebody that's really going to track not just the performance of my investment account, but the performance of my net worth, give me advice on all aspects of my financial life, from selling my home to downsizing to buying a car to helping with my aging parents to how do I pay for my kids' education, all those questions and then some and even more. That's what we do at Friedman Financial. If now is the time for you to get serious about your financial planning, I would encourage you strongly to contact our office, schedule a free initial consultation in our office. Phone number is 978-531-8108. That's 978-531-8108. And experience what real personalized financial planning advice is all about. When we last left, I promised you I was going to give you the answer to the question of why investors, you and me, average investors, typical people that like to invest their money, why they continuously underperform market indexes. And And all of the advice that I'm providing you today comes from a survey, comes from a report that came from Dalbar, the Quantitative Analysis of Investment Behavior. Dalbar, if you want to know who they are, they provided me with who Dalbar is. I'll even read this to you if you want to know. Since 1994, Dalbar's quantitative analysis of investment behavior has measured the effects of investor decisions to buy, to sell, and to switch into and out of mutual funds over short and long-term time frames. These effects are measured by the perspective of the investor and do not represent the performance of the investments themselves. The results consistently show year after year after year after year that the average investor earns less, in many cases much less, than mutual fund performance reports would suggest. And here's one of the big reasons why. If you want to pick an investment, you sit down with your financial advisor, or maybe you do it yourself, and you look at the menu of mutual funds that are out there, or the mutual funds, exchange-traded funds, index funds, whatever it is that you might be able to buy. And you start to make a decision, well, how do I choose from the 20 or 30 funds that are out there? How do I choose the one that works for me? Well, what's one of the major criteria that we look at? Time horizon. How did it do over the past 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, and 20 years? You want to make sure that those mutual funds have performed well through all different types of market cycles because you're a long-term investor, right? Well, here's the problem. S&P 500, when you invest in the S&P 500 index, or when you're following or watching the S&P 500 index, they're going to give you continuous performance 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, 10 year, 15 year, 20 year, 25 year, 30 year, because nobody's adding money to it. No one's taking any money out of it. You're just going to get straight performance. They're not getting out. They're not getting in. But the average mutual fund investor who's trying to beat the S&P 500 does this. Get this. The equity fund, average equity fund retention rate is at 4.03 years. That means when you buy a mutual fund, the average person holds a mutual fund, a stock-based mutual fund, for 4 years. So what was the point of looking at the 5-year, 10-year, 15-year, and 20-year track record? It's because we believe, oh, this time it's different, Mark. This is different. You know, now that we got Trump in office, this time is different. Or now that we've got China, or the Hong Kong airport shutting down, this is different. Or North Korea acting the way they're acting. Or the immigrant issue, this is different. Or the gun issue, this is different, Mark. You don't think we've gone through hills and valleys in our history? We've gone through world wars. We've gone through horrible, horrific terrorism. We've gone through a banking crisis where the financial institutions almost shut down completely. Yet this time it's different for a really long extended period of time? I don't think so. And remember, when you're looking back historically, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, of all of that mutual fund performance, remember, those mutual funds lived through those hills and valleys already. So how is this different? Well, Mark, I don't buy green bananas anymore. That's what some people might say to me. You know, well, if you're not buying green bananas, you have no business being in the stock market. I mean, if you're not buying green bananas, That's a problem. If you're a long-term investor, you're a long-term investor. You can't be worried about the day-to-day fluctuations that happen over a year, even 3 years or 5 years. They're going to happen. We're likely to have another 10% drop in the stock market this year. We'll likely have one next year. We might even have a 20% drop. Who cares? If you're a long-term investor, who cares? Here's what's rather interesting. That retention rate, how long people hold on to their funds, their stock-based funds, 4.03 years, has been static for years. Nothing's different. It wasn't different in 2008. That's about what it's been. However, if you're a bond fund investor, your retention rate dropped by almost 6 months. From an average of 3.45 years in 2007 to an average of 3.04 years in 2018. Now that, to me, is remarkable. Remember, bonds were supposed to be the safe investment. I'm using quotation marks with safe. But people traded in and out of those. Oh, that's probably because you heard, oh, interest rates are going up. Better get out of my bonds because those are going to go bad. Well, how'd that work out for you last year and the year before and the year before and the year before? Interest rates have actually gone down. No one was expecting it, but they went down. Interest rates go through cycles just like stock markets go through cycles. Be a long-term investor. Work with a financial advisor who will tweak your portfolio. How about this? The average asset allocation fund. Remember we talked about that 60-40 split thing? The average asset allocation fund retention rates dropped by more than 2 months last year, from 4.65 years in 2017 to 2.52 years. So let's call it 4 years, folks. The average investor is making wholesale changes in their mutual funds, whether it's stocks or bonds, approximately every 4 years. There's one thing that I've been saying since I started in this business back in 1991. It was pretty radical for me to say it to the face of representatives of mutual fund companies back in the 90s and early 2000s. And now the mutual fund companies believe every word that I'm about to say to you, yet they won't say it publicly. Folks, at the end of the day, because of investment behavior, a fund is a fund is a fund. You want to buy, I agree, you need to buy a large cap growth fund. You need to have a large cap value fund. There's probably 6,000 in each category. But you're never going to find the best one. You'll find a decent one, an average one, above average one. You can certainly screen out the lousy ones. But at the end of the day, all of those that fall in that average and above average category, they're all about the same. Now, the portfolio manager won't think so. They're going to tell you why they're so much better than the next guy, because there's an ego attached to that. Of course, that makes sense. But at the end of the day, a fund is a fund is a fund. And I said the only thing that changes, because this week I'm going to San Diego. I'm going to go to a investor conference with LPL Financial. And they'll be in this big exhibit hall in the San Diego Sales Pavilion, that sales, S-A-I-L-S Pavilion, out there in San Diego. There'll be 10,000 people there. There'll be hundreds of booths. Every mutual fund, every investment company you could imagine will all be there with their tables, hucking their stuff, encouraging us to use their investment strategies, their funds. They've all been there. It's the same ones that were there 20 years ago. The only thing that's changed is the table that the wholesaler of the fund is standing behind. I could go 4 years ago and I might see the guy from Putnam or the guy from Fidelity or the guy from Vanguard standing there telling me all about the great things with their fund. And I'll go back this year and the guy from Putnam is standing by the behind the Pioneer booth. And the guy from Fidelity is standing behind the Prudential booth. And the guy from wherever, they all move around. The only thing that changes in this business is the table that the wholesaler stands behind. What you need to develop, what you need to create when it comes to investing is an asset allocation strategy. Should you be 60-40? Should you be 70-30? The actual selection of the investments does not matter, especially if you're picking mutual funds. But that strategy needs to align with your overall goals. It needs to align with your overall plan. Because when you're approaching retirement, when you're in retirement, you need to know that a strategy is in place designed to withstand the fluctuation, the volatility that goes on in economics, in the markets, every single day. That, my friends, is what I call financial advice in a language you can understand. We got to get out of here. But we will be back next Sunday with much more. Thanks for tuning in. My name is Mark Friedman. You're listening to Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial on North Shore 104.9.
Thanks for tuning into Dollars and Cents with Friedman Financial. During the show, specific investments may have been discussed. These discussions are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations. Please consult a certified financial planner, tax professional, or attorney to determine what is appropriate for you. Consider your investment objectives, risk, charges, and expenses of an investment company before investing. That's because investing involves risk, including a loss of principal. A prospectus contains this and other information about mutual funds, variable annuities, and variable annuity subaccounts. Prospectuses should be read carefully before making an investment. Securities are offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment and financial planning advice is offered through Mark's firm, Friedman Financial, which is a registered investment advisor and a separate entity from LPL. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next Sunday at 8 a.m.
prior show was a paid program that does not express the views, opinions, or beliefs of North Shore 104.9, the station management, its employees, or staff.